don't know why I survived all those overdoses, but I plan on helping as many people as I can.
If what we learned here and how we came together here, we can address addiction as a whole community, that will be the success story.
Well, what is it that I want to do for the future?
A lot of opportunities get close to you. For a long time, I had a lot of dreams about what I wanted to do and all this stuff, and really, I just want to be happy, whatever that looks like.
All this week on The Takeaway, we've been looking at the opioid crisis in Ohio through the lenses of two women, 25-year-old April Arion and 41-year-old Lauren Hamilton and their families. Both women overdosed on opioids in a state that's been crushed by the epidemic of overdose deaths, and both women survived. New data this week from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention suggests that drug overdose deaths overall in the U.S. could be starting to fall. But while fewer people are dying, many people are still overdosing and getting revived thanks to the drug naloxone, which is more widely available today than ever before. But the stories of people like April and Lauren didn't stop at overdose. They survived, and with their families, they've had to navigate life in the aftermath. Today, we conclude our series, Life After Overdose, by looking ahead. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. And we begin outside Cleveland for one piece of what Lauren Hamilton's life looks like today. The Takeaway's Alexandra Boti reports.
I'm in Lakewood, Ohio, a suburb of Cleveland, with Lauren Hamilton and a group of her friends. It's Wednesday evening, and they've just finished their West Side Agnostics Gathering. That's an Alcoholics and Narcotics Anonymous meeting. The group meets weekly in a library basement. But the night isn't over. After the meeting, we head across the street.
I'm Dan Prack. We're on Madison Avenue in Lakewood, and we're walking into the Bion Club, which is a sober social club. And we're going to see how that goes.
All right, lead the way.
All right.
This is the Believe It or Not, or Bion Club.
So the club space is meant to provide a forum for people who maybe aren't as into the God concept that's really prevalent in AA meetings, especially in the Cleveland area.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's a big push in the political sphere here in Ohio because of the opioid crisis, and we're stepping into the gap, and that's the gap between what happens at the end of an AA meeting and what happens out on the street when you walk outside.
I'm Billy C., and I'm the president of the Bion Club. I'm also one of the founders of Westside Agnostics.
It's not hard to find Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous meetings in the Cleveland area and across Ohio. There are more sober and recovery clubs than ever, too, where people can go for educational programs or just to socialize. But it's hard to find a setting that doesn't incorporate religion. So the Bion Club was born.
So when we were looking for a name, we asked Campbell.
Campbell is who?
Friends from the West Side Agnostic Meet, and he's a punster. And so he gave us a list of all these names, and Bion Club won.
Is there a runner-up?
The runner-up was Drunk Tank. So, yeah, and it might be a little hard to rent a place that you're going to name Drunk Tank. Right. But the Bion Club is, we are not an agnostic sober club. We're a sober club. We're a recovery club. And we don't want any. We want everybody. We want your Catholics and your Protestants and your evangelicals and your atheists. We'll take anyone. We have Rich the Witch, who's one of our pagan members. And, you know, the Bion Club is a good all-purpose name that says that you don't have to come here and expect a prayer meeting.
Wait, so let me ask, have you all sought out this type of thing before and not found it?
For whatever reason, notwithstanding that we're in a neighborhood or a city that has probably more meetings per square mile than anywhere in the country, it's a very densely packed area in the first place, and it's also historically very Irish Catholic, and so there's a lot of people in AA around here, and for whatever reason, there's not been a club here historically, and I mean, I think that's a big part of it, is just the geography. But I also do think that some of the clubs tend to have a little bit of a different vibe than we're envisioning here. We're hoping that this will be a younger, more open-minded set, perhaps, than you'd inquire at some of those other clubs. And, at least that's the premise we're starting with. But whoever shows up is more than welcome.
Lauren says it's been hard to secure a place to rent. The first space she and her friend showed me actually fell through. But the group remains undeterred. And for Lauren, being involved with the club is an exciting piece of her future.
I plan on serving on various committees for the club. And then ideally, once the club is actually up and running, I'll be teaching yoga and 12-step recovery classes / meetings at the club location. And it entails basically like a 45-minute yoga class and then a 45-minute 12-step meeting. I mean, for me, it's allowed me to work on, you know, staying present, listening to my body. I can feel warning signs in my body, like depending on what emotional state I'm in. So I think it can be helpful for anyone in recovery.
Back in Dayton, April Arion's situation looks really different. Today, she is in Montgomery County Jail and faces charges related to her drug use in two different counties. One is a felony burglary charge in Clark County, which she told me about back in the spring.
For a burglary my boyfriend committed that I wasn't present for. It's a long story. But you see that a lot, especially with addicts. Boyfriends committing crimes and girlfriends just get charged for it too. So that's just like the way it goes.
At the time we spoke, April was out on bond. The other charge she is currently facing is for forging a check in Montgomery County.
Being an addict has a lot of repercussions with the legal system, so I can't go back for some of the things that I would have. I'd like to see some of those laws changed. Can't work with kids, can't. Pretty much the only fields you can work in as a violent felon with a degree is the drug counselor realm of things. I don't want to stay in that community for the rest of my life. And that's just me. A lot of people find a lot of gratitude working in the field, but I don't want the end of my line to end up on the other side of a rehab. And that's just me, personally. And will that ever change? I don't know, maybe. But I'll probably try to go to school and get an undergraduate in political science or something like that, English maybe. And try to go to law school someday. You can do that as a felon, a violent felon.
That's actually the path that Lauren took, returning to work as an attorney after getting clean. Her employer saw her through relapses, she says, and has supported her to this day. And now Lauren is coming up on a really big milestone.
On July 1st of this year, I'll have a year sober.
Relapse is common for people suffering from opioid addiction. Some studies put the relapse rate upwards of 80% after opioid detoxification. Lauren says she thinks she has relapsed about 30 times since her first opioid overdose in 2014.
I never, ever thought I would be able to say the word year in conjunction with the word sober. I'm very proud of myself. And it's just like, you know, okay, it's just, you know, it's a year, it's another day. It feels like a really important milestone to me.
Since we first met in the spring, Lauren is talking more about her past and about her future. She was the keynote speaker at a fundraiser for the Women's Recovery Center last month, where she found sobriety.
Thank you. So my name is Lauren Hamilton. I'm a recovering alcoholic and drug addict. I use my full name because I feel like I have a duty to help reduce the stigma that surrounds addiction.
I definitely want to keep doing things like that. I've actually applied to be a board member of the Adams Board here in Cuyahoga County, which is the Alcohol, Drug Addiction, Mental Health Services Board. We'll see if that pans out. I think it's important, you know, to have people on the board that have been through addiction and recovery and treatment and all of that. And I like making decisions, so seems like a good fit. I'd actually say it's been a pretty transformative experience sharing my story with you, and then around the same time, you know, being asked to speak at the fundraiser for the Women's Recovery Center and sharing my story there. Those were kind of my first opportunities to share my story like that since I've actually been sober for a little bit of time now. I think it's helped me grow in my recovery to learn to not only accept myself, but to see my past as something that can help other people if I just share it. And it actually reminds me of something that is in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, if I can read it to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's something my friend Billy always reads. And it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. So I think, you know, it's the whole experience has allowed me to see the value in sharing my story and in not living a life of shame. And I think that's so important, you know, and I want to do my part, which is why I, you know, sometimes give my whole name. Like when I spoke at the fundraiser for the Women's Recovery Center, I introduced myself to this room full of 200 people using my full name, because I feel like I really can play a role in reducing the stigma around addiction. And I think that's so crucial. I think that most addicts and alcoholics just have so much shame. And I know that for me, every time I relapsed, the reason I kept using and kept relapsing is because I was just way too ashamed to ask anyone for help, to you know, let anyone know that I had failed.
Nearly 1 year of being sober has given Lauren some distance to reflect on how different her life feels now.
I cannot remember a time in my life where I trusted myself. So I really am starting to feel lately like I can trust myself, and because I can trust myself, I can extend trust to other people. And that whole experience has been so freeing for me. I think for just so much of my life, I acted really impulsively and reactively. So now I've kind of slowed down and I'm thinking things through, and I can trust myself to make rational decisions and to act with my best interest in mind. You know, it just feels way more safe and secure and freeing to be able to trust. I'm no longer living in a state of fear, I'm living in a state of love.
We'll keep in touch with Lauren and April to find out how their lives continue to unfold. Lori, April's mom, tells me April will finish a recovery program in jail, and she hopes her daughter will be able to stay sober when she gets out. And as for Lauren, she's focused on celebrating her 1 year of sobriety. She says she'll go to an AA meeting, and she'll have some cake with her friends from the Bion Club. For The Takeaway, I'm Alexandra Boti in Ohio.
And we've been hearing from you about your experiences with life after overdose.
Hello, this is Christina from Hubbardston, Mass. The words of hope that I would share with those struggling from addiction are, addiction is a part of you, but it doesn't have to be the strongest part. Never stop striving.
Hi, this is Kathy from Dallas, Texas. And for anyone who is still struggling with addiction, what I would say to them is to never give up. You only have this day, and it's absolutely worth it.
Monica from Corvallis, Oregon. You deserve help, love, and understanding. You are worth loving. You are not a bad person. Life can be different. You might feel totally alone, but you aren't. You have made and you will make mistakes, but they don't need to define you.
This is Lauren in Corvallis, Oregon. I'm the son of an addict. As a child, parent, or friend of an addict, you must learn to balance the duty of telling the hard truth when it needs to be told with the essence of compassion, always keeping your heart open to the reality and the fullness of this person's experience. This seems impossible, but it's the only way to not get dragged down with them.
Hi, this is Ashley Dodge from Denver, Colorado. I just like to say that it's not easy and it's never over. There will be relapses and you'll feel isolated, but it's important to surround yourself with supportive people and avoid temptations. I hope you put yourself in the best place for success.
Remember, there are resources out there if you or someone you know is struggling with addiction. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration has a 24-hour free, confidential, and bilingual referral and information helpline for people and families. And that's 1-800-662-4357 or 1-800-662-HELP. Again, that's 1-800-662-4357. Thanks so much for sharing your stories with us. And you can share your words of hope and wisdom for those struggling with opioid and other addiction by tweeting us at The Takeaway using the hashtag LifeAfterOverdose. Or call us and leave a message at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We'll include as many of your calls as possible on an upcoming special podcast episode with all of our stories out of Ohio this week. In the meantime, you can find the whole series at thetakeaway.org/LifeAfterOverdose. This is The Takeaway. Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.